As I promised this time, I will be dealing with the concepts of death and life in Rumi. This is going to be our last session. I am thankful to God and to the audience who were patient and gave me the encouragement of continuing these lectures, and I hope that these have been useful to you. I'm sure, and you realize that Rumi is like an ocean. We cannot pour it and confine it in a jug, according to him himself. But this is something that we can do in a finite sessions. Now, one of the main subjects which is dear to the heart of every mystic, including Rumi, is the idea of life. And the opposite of life, which is of course death, but for these people, for the contemplatives, death seems much more important than life. And they try to understand life through understanding death. Remember that we were talking about the lover and the courage of lovers as one of the main characteristics of love. Love gives courage to the lover, and that actually encourages him to sacrifice his self, to deny his self, and to become selfless. Now, this selflessness, of course, is the right and the deep meaning of death. But before coming to that, we have to go through some other topics and some other ideas in order to understand better and deeper the idea of death in Rumi and contemplatives like him. Remember the Platonic idea that this world is just and nothing but a shadow of the real world. And the shadowiness of the world not only reflects its being the shadow of the reality, i.e. a kind of thinner reality, if you like, but also always a shadow is the inverse of the real object. So this inverseness also is a point which has to be considered, has to be taken into consideration. In this world, whatever we see and whatever we look at and we understand is just a shadow and an inverse shadow of the real object which lies elsewhere, lies in another world. This means, very directly, that death means life and life means death. Life in this world is only a shadow, an inverse shadow of the death, and the death is an inverse shadow of the life. And this is the property of everything else. Joy, the real joy is sorrow, the real sorrow is joy, and other things. So Rumi actually goes on in detail to tell us, in various places of his books, how this world is an inverse shadow of the real world. And therefore, according to him, death or dying to this world is nothing but to be reborn into another world, which is the real one. And when we find the real object, we will realize that we were not alive in the real sense of the word, but we were actually in a state of death, that we considered it in a wrong way to be the real life. So this is the whole thing, but of course it is not as simple as that, so we will see in his own words what he has got to say about this. In the natural level of the description, according to Rumi and according to the old or ancient natural science, this material world is there and exists because there is a balance in it between the opposite forces. Now, if one of these opposite forces by chance overcomes other force, so that will be the beginning of the death of this world, the disintegration. Now it is in the state of integration, so to speak, but this integration does not mean that we have got a consistent world. It is a contradictory, it is full of contradiction, it is full of opposites. But these opposites are in a state of reconciliation, if you like. And this is exactly what Rumi says. Zindagani ashti zeddehas. Life is the reconciliation of the opposites. Now there is a balance between the opposites in this world. But the moment that this balance is broken, is disturbed, that will be the beginning of the disintegration of the world and the disintegration of life. So that is his definition of this world. And because of this, actually he tells us that the supernatural world, the unseen world, if you like, is free from contradiction, therefore it is free from death. There will be no death in the real world, in the next life, in the unseen world, because it is not constructed out of opposite forces or contradictory things and entities and so on. So it is a unique, consistent world which is always in peace. There is no dialectical, if you like, oppositions or whatever. So this world, the world of matter, has got two main characteristics, number and opposites. Things in this world are different so that we can enumerate them. 1, 2, 3, 4, and 4. So there is no unity between the things in this world. Not only there is no unity, there is no consistency either. It is always contradiction and opposition. So this is the real description, the real definition of this world. When you come to the unseen world, to the next life, first of all, there is a kind of unity between everything. Remember, I mentioned the story of a plaintiff in the court who brought as witness two Sufis with him. And the judge told him, not only two Sufis, but 2,000 Sufis are only one. So you have to bring two witnesses with you. So in the real, in the spiritual world, things are one and the same. They have got a kind of unity and integrity and continuity. This continuity is of this world. And this continuity means number, means difference, means opposition even, and contradiction, as I said. So this is the real characteristic of this world. Now, when there is a balance among the opposite forces, there is a tentative life, i.e. the material life in this world. And when the balance is broken, so there will be death. So this is on the natural level of the description of the death and life. Exactly the same applies to our body, our organic body. According to Rumi, and again to the to ancient biology, there is a kind of compatibility or reconciliation between the opposite forces inside our material body. And when this balance is broken, again the death and the disintegration of the body will ensue. And we will lose our life and the integrity of our body. But of course, this is not. This is only so far as the material world and the organic bodies are concerned. Now, in the third book, in the book 3 of Mathnavi, there is a very long story. The story, at root and its spirit, is a very simple story, but it is the art. And of course the miracle of Rumi that has turned this very simple short story into a very elaborate and complex love story. It's about 1,000 verses, 1,000 poems. You have to read it for yourself. Rumi there is at his best, really, in order to describe us the meaning of life, the properties, and the states of the soul and the mind of a lover and his relationship with the beloved. The story is that a man actually broke off with his friend. The friend happened to be his boss as well. So he just left him for a while. And then it came to him to go back to his friend, to his boss. And he did it. So that is the whole story. And you see how simple and how lifeless it seems. But in the miraculous hands of Rumi, it has taken such a big life. It has become so lively, full of sense and full of love, that it is really surprising when you read it. You can relate this story in 2-3 verses only. A man and his boss, and breaking off from the boss and returning to him, going back to him again. That is all. 2-3 sentences. But these 2-3 sentences now comes out in Rumi's book in 1,000 sentences. None of them are redundant. None is redundant, actually. Full of life and full of poeticness, if you like. So the man becomes a lover, and the boss becomes the beloved, and the breaking off from the boss becomes the separation, and going back to the beloved means, of course, to the boss means going back to the beloved. Now the counselors, the blamers come in. Some people counsel him not to go back. The blamers come in, and everybody has got his own saying, his own advice, or his own blame. And so the story becomes so complex. And you know, as Rumi goes on with association of ideas all the time, as I mentioned before. So in actually telling us the story, there are many other stories that come to his mind and he mentions. So there is a story inside another story, interwoven, and so it becomes such a big story. The story is about love and about death and about the courage of the lover to die and to leave his life behind. So that is the whole story. Actually, it is in this story that Rumi mentions one of the very famous poems of Al-Hallaj. We had a few words about him here previously, in some previous sessions. You know, Hallaj is the arc model of the lovers in Islamic mysticism. As you know, he lived in the 2nd century Islamic calendar, and he was not only a mystic, but also probably a politician. And he has got some political ideas anyway. But because of his claim that he was the truth, or perhaps he was God himself, the word and the expression that he repeatedly announced and made public was an al-haq, I am the truth. As you know, truth in Arabic, and the word haq means both God and truth. So he was taken to be claiming that he was God. So he was hanged eventually. And he was actually sentenced to death by a number of the jurists, and then he was hanged. His legs and hands were amputated, so it was a very bad death that he went through. So he became the arch model of the Sufis, of the mystics, and of martyrs of mysticism. Okay? So, and his story sometimes is construed on the model of the story of the Jesus. And some of the people even have written about this, that Hallaj in the Islamic history is like Jesus in Christianity. Or perhaps the reconstruction of his story now seems like this. Anyway, but he was a martyr according to the Sufis. And as I said, his main public motto was an al-haq. Now he has got some poems in Arabic as well. He was originally an Iranian, but he didn't speak Persian. He has got Arabic verses. In one of the most well-known verses, he says, "Oh, come kill me! Oh, come kill me! Uqtuluni, uqtuluni! Inna fi qatli hayatan. My life is in my being killed." So that is very famous of him. And Rumi actually mentions these sentences and these words by Al-Hallaj here. Now, we are going to read this passage, this piece of Rumi here, because it contains a lot of ideas which I would like to explain this time. And then, of course, there is another piece in the same story, both of which are very important for our purpose. So, how the lover, impelled by the love, said, "I don't care," to the persons who counseled and scolded him. These are the words that the lover actually said to his counselors and to the blamers and the rest. So it is in page 215. I just go through it and mention some points, some relevant points about this business of death. "In that quarter where love was increasing my pain, Abu Hanifa and Shafi gave no instruction." Now, Abu Hanifa and Shafi are two grand jurists of the Islamic world. So he means that law has got nothing to do with love. So that is the exact meaning of the purpose of the verse. Abu Hanifa is, of course, he was an Iranian, but he lived in Kufa, and Shafi also another grand jurist. These are two masters of two major schools of fiqh, of law, in the Sunni sect. So means that do not ask their legal regulations about law. Law, love is not something to be covered by law, and it is not something that comes under the predicates forbidden or permitted or obligatory or whatever. These are actually legal predicates, forbidden and obligatory. Now, love is not something which can come under the coverage of law, of legal regulations. So that is the meaning of this. So please do not forbid me. Please do not tell me this is forbidden, this is not good, this is illicit, this is illegal, and so on and so forth. That's not the way one can speak about love. "Do not thou threaten me with being killed, for I thirst lamentably for mine own blood." So, "Hin makun tahdidam az kushtan, ke man tishne zaram be khun khishtan." For lovers, there is a dying at every moment. Verily, the dying of lovers is not of one sort. This, of course, tells us a lot. Every lover dies his own death, so their dyings are not of one sort. This is important because not only for lovers, and every lover dies his own death, but every person dies his own death. So death is the most personal thing in our life. It is part of life. It is not end of our life, it is part of our life, and it is the most personal experience we will go through. And in order to know oneself, one has to concentrate on the personal, in common experiences. There are common experiences, there are personal experiences. Personal experience, in order to know oneself, is much more important, much more significant than the common experience. Perhaps we all eat, we all drink the same, and we have got the same way to eat and to, but there is not the same way of dying. Everybody dies his own death, and especially lovers, according to Rumi, die their own death. So a little bit more about this later. For lovers, there is a dying at every moment, at every moment. Verily, the dying of lovers is not of one sort. He, i.e. the lover, hath 200 souls or lives from the soul of guidance, and those 200 he is sacrificing at every instant. For each soul he receives 10 as its price. Read from Quran 10 like unto them. This is of course about the good deeds. It is in Quran that for every good action or every good deed you will receive 10 in response. In that one of friendly countenance shed my blood, dancing I will strew my soul upon him. I have tried it. My death consists in life. When I escape from this life, it's to endure forever. So the Persian, آزمودم مرگ من در زندگی است. I have tried it. My death is in my life. And when I escape from this life, then my real life will begin. I have tried it. My death is in life. When I escape from this life, it's to endure forever. Kill me, O trusty friends. Lo, in my being killed is life and life. These words and these verses in Rumi is in Arabic, actually. Although that makes the cheek radiant, O spirit of everlastingness, draw my spirit to thyself and generously bestow on me the meeting with thee. I have beloved whose love roasts the bowels of my heart. If he wished to walk upon my eye, he would walk. Speak Persian, though Arabic is sweeter. Love indeed hath 100 other tongues. When the scent of that chamber of hearts begins to fly, all those tongues become dumbfounded. Remember, we had a word about perplexity. Here, actually, he is talking about the same thing. When the scent of the beloved spreads, all the tongues and languages become perplexed. I mean, you cannot say what you feel or what you experience. And in the case of the death, of course, the lover's death, the same experience comes to you. I will cease from a speech. The sweetheart has begun to speak. Be all ear and God best now. Okay, up to here. So you see what Rumi is up to. First of all, the lover who is careless about his life, about his soul, so to speak, and he is absolutely ready to sacrifice it for his beloved. And his cry, calling people to come and to kill him, because he finds life in being killed, in the death. And his experience that he has tried life and he has found it nothing but death. Therefore he thinks that he escapes the life, he will actually embrace the real life after escaping from the from this particular life. Now let me explain a little bit the framework in which these ideas actually lie and reside. Look at the image or the imagery of the inhabitants of this world according to the mysticism. Of course we are living in this world and we think that we are people who have got a right to live, and life is very sweet to us, and we try to make it even sweeter to us, and life is very dear to our heart and is very precious. We have got regulations about death, about murder, about life. We have got medicine, we have got medications, hospitals, this and that in order to protect our life, and so on and so forth. So the story of life is a very well-known story, and all of us actually care about our life. But this is a kind of heedlessness, according to Rumi. This is a world of heedlessness. Heedlessness is a key concept in Rumi, a key concept. We live a life of heedlessness. We are entangled in heedlessness. This doesn't mean negligence. This doesn't mean carelessness. That is not the case. It means heedlessness, or perhaps unawareness of the real things which are going. We are doing, or perhaps we are trapped in life, according to Rumi. We are prisoners of life. It is not the case that we have chosen to live on the earth. It is not the case that we have chosen the quality of life, and it is not the case that we are making the best of our lives. So none of these are really the case. But we think that we are doing the best. We think that we are leading our lives. And we think that we know the meaning of the life, or perhaps how to give the sense or the meaning to our lives. All this happens under heedlessness, in the sense that we are so trapped in what we are doing that we are heedless. We are ignorant absolutely of the outcome of what we are doing. And even we do not want to know, because if we know it, that will destroy the whole life. It is the secret of the life that we have to be heedless about the meaning of the life and the outcome of the results and consequences of what we are doing at the moment. According to the imagery of Rumi, we have got two images. Number one is we are the prisoners. Number two, we are travelers. Okay. This you find it in all mysticism, in Ghazali, in Rumi, and elsewhere. Prisoners and travelers at the same time. For a prisoner, it is not appropriate actually to make the prison sweeter to him. He must be conscious of being a prisoner. He must be conscious. He must remind himself or herself every day that he is in prison. And it is the duty, the obligation of a prisoner to escape the prison, to break the prison, and to find a way out of the prison. That is the main duty of a prisoner. To be mindful of the prison actually will lead to a certain action, namely to break the prison and to flee and to escape from the prison. So that is one thing. Most of the people are heedless about this. They think that they are free. They think that they are not prisoners at all. And they think that they can do whatever they decide to do or whatever they wish to do. Whereas this is not the real case. So that is one thing, according to Rumi. So he repeatedly reminds us that we are prisoners in this world, and sooner or later, not only we have to leave the place, but we have to actually escape the place, escape the prison, to flee from it and to break it. The second image is being a traveler. So we are here in this world. This is just part of our journey. We are journeymen, or journey women, if you like. This is part of our journey. It is not the destination. Most of the people think that this is the destination, and we are inhabitants, and so we are now in our own place. We are not in our real place or in the destination. We are in the middle of the journey, and the journey is not yet over. So it has to continue. It has to continue. So there is a destination to this journey, but the destination has not come yet. So that is really the meaning of the death. So the moment you see yourself as a prisoner and as a traveler, as a journeyman, the death will become so close to you that you would expect it. You won't flee it. You won't ignore it. You do not try to overlook it. On the contrary, you would like to see it, you would like to think about it, you would like to be mindful of it, and even you would like to invite it to you. So that is a higher level of approaching the idea or the concept of death. Contrary to the modern attitude toward death, everybody tries to forget it, everybody tries to ignore it, everybody tries to downgrade it, and to see it as the end of everything. It is not like that. This is not a mark of the courage or the awareness of the people of this time, that they are so heedless about death. On the contrary, this is because they are so ignorant of the meaning of the life that they are forgetful of the idea of death. To know the life, you have to know the death. in order to give the meaning and the sense to your life, you have to understand the real sense of the death, of passing away. Because as I said, it is not the end of our life, it is part of our life. And that is the most personal experience that we will have in future. And from now we can actually prepare ourselves for that experience and think about it more in depth. So, now look at this lover who is at the same time a prisoner and a traveler, a journeyman, as I said. So now you understand his words and what he says, that come kill me because I find my life in my death. The second thing that should be mentioned here, that the death is not confined to the bodily death, of course. This is just a type of death which is the basis one. For the real meaning of death, according to Sufis and mystics, is to dissolve one's personality into the beloved's personality. Always when you escape or they break your prison, that means the death. So that is the meaning of the death. So when he comes, when he says, come and kill me, means come and show me the way out of the prison. That is the meaning of the death. So it doesn't mean that it was a suicidal, if you like, I mean, claim, something that somebody wants it out of a kind of aberration of mind or illness or whatever. No, what he meant in the framework that I'm giving you here is come and break the prison, come and show me the way out, come and free me and liberate me, emancipate me, and show me the way out of the prison. In the second piece which we are going to read, Rumi there tells us the meaning of being a traveler in this world. Seemingly it is a kind of evolutionary idea, and even some of the modern commentators of Rumi have interpreted this piece which we are going to read on this particular model, I mean evolutionary idea. But as we read it and we will see it, it doesn't really lend itself to this, and I would say that was the remotest thing to the mind of Rumi. What he originally says is this, that we are composed of soul and body, and our body is from clay, is from the soil, according to the ancient biology. So anyway, we belong to the material world partly, and then partly belong to the immaterial or incorporeal world. So in the ladder of evolution, actually such a thing has happened to all of us. Therefore, we are in the middle of the journey. Our destination is to become pure souls. So we started from the pure matter and we will end up in a pure soul. So we are in the middle of the journey. So we have died a number of deaths so far, because we have died to the matter in order to become life and live. And we have to die to this life in order to become alive again in a second life. So that is originally what he says, but since we have to read this first and then come to the interpretation. Anybody would like to read us this piece, Martin again, will you, this 218, yeah. How the lover answered those who scolded and threatened him. Yes.
He said, I am drunkable. The water draws me, though I know that the water too will kill me. None afflicted with dropsy will flee from the water, even if it checkmate and ruin him 200 times. If my hands and belly become swollen, if the passion desire for the water will not abate and depart from me, and the time when they ask me of my inward state, I say, with that the sea were flowing within me. Let the water skip, my belly, be burst by the waves of the water. If I die, my death is acceptable. Wherever I see the water of the stream, jealousy comes over me, and I wish that I might be in its place. With hands swollen like a tambourine, and belly like a drum, I am beating the drum of my love for the water as the rose does. If that trusty spirit spill my blood, I will drink drop on drop of blood like the earth. I am a blood drinker, like the earth and like the embryo. Ever since I became a lover, I am engaged in this trade. During the night, I boil on the fire like a kettle. All day till nightfall, I drink blood like the sand. I repent that I set contrivance afoot in order to escape and fled from that which his anger desired. Let him drive on. Let him not restrain his anger against my intoxicated soul. He is the feast of the sacrifice, and the lover is the buffalo for slaughter. Whether the buffalo sleep or whether it eats something, he nurtures, fattens, he for the feast and the slaughter. Deem me to be as the cow of Moses that gave life to the murdered man. Each limb of me is the means of raising from the dead every one that is spiritually free. The cow of Moses was one offered in sacrifice. Her smallest limb brought a murdered man to life. And its touch, the murdered man sprang up from his place at the word spoken by God. Strike him with part of her. O my noble friends, slaughter this cow, the fleshy soul, if he desires to raise the life of the spirit possessed of insight. I died in the inorganic state.
Yeah, from here actually this evolutionary ladder. Yeah.
I died to the inorganic state and became endowed with growth. And then I died to vegetable growth and attained to the animal. I died from animality and became Adam. Why then should I fear? When have I become less if I die? At the next remove I shall die to man, that I may soar and lift up my head amongst the angels. And I must escape even from the state of the angel. Everything is perishing except his face. Once more I shall be sacrificed and die to the angel. I shall become that which enters not into the imagination. Then I shall become non-existence. Non-existence saith to me, in tones loud as an organ, verily unto him shall we return. No death to be the thing signified by what the Muslim community are agreed upon. Namely that the water of life is hidden in the land of darkness. Grow from this riverbank, like the water lily, greedy and craving for death as a sufferer from dropsy. The water is death to him, and yet he is seeking the water and drinking it. And God best knoweth the right course. Oh, the cold lover, clad in the felt garment of shame, who from fear of losing his life is fleeing from the beloved. Oh, thou disgrace, even to women, behold hundreds, thousands of souls, clapping their hands and rushing toward the sword of his love. Thou hast seen the river. Spill thy jug in the river. How should the water take flight from the river? When the water in the jug goes into the river water, it disappears in it, and it becomes the river. Its attributes have passed away, and its essence remains. After this, he does not dwindle or become ill-favored. I have hanged myself on his palm tree, an excuse for having fled from him.
Okay, thank you. So this is the fragrance of mysticism. A thousand points actually are being mentioned in this. Part of it, of course, is the dialogue or the what the lover had to say about his love towards his beloved, and then, of course, comes somehow some philosophical, mystical points about the life and death, and several deaths that so far we have experienced. Now we are in this present life, and so we have to die from this as well in order to enter another world or another life, and so on and so forth. So we have been the matter, and then the vegetal, and then the animal, and now we are human beings. But the road is not ended. So there are a lot of other stages that we can go through, according to Rumi, go through. So we sacrifice ourselves, so to speak, in order to become angels, and from the angelhood we again can be sacrificed in order to become non-existence. So this non-existence in the Rumi poetry does not mean non-existence in the literal sense of the word. Non-existence means non-material, because according to Rumi, this world seems existent, and because of this he calls it the existent world, and the unseen world does not seem to be existent, because our criterion of existence is materiality. I mean, the common sense criterion of existence is materiality. Whatever is material, we suppose it to be really existent. And whatever cannot be seen is invisible, is not sensible, is not tangible, is not edible. That we call it non-existent. And because of this, usually people think that the unseen world does not really objectively exist, because we cannot feel it, we cannot sense it, we cannot touch it, and so on. So that's why there is a kind of scorn in it when he calls it non-existence. In the same story, actually, he tells us the story of the Mary, to her to whom appeared the angel. Now the angel said to the Mary, "Don't be frightened from me. I come from the world of non-existence." So exactly, that is the word. That Rumi actually tells us and shows what he means by the existence. He says to Mary, "I am a very sophisticated figure. I am both objective and subjective. I have got, so to speak, a leg inside your soul and a leg outside your soul. I am both in the objective world and in the subjective world." These are all the descriptions that Rumi gives from the angel or the spirit who appeared to Mary in order to give birth to the to conceive her. Now, he said, "I am coming from the world of non-existence. Dar Adam man, I am the king of non-existence. Dar Adam man shaham wa sahib alam. I am the king of the world of non-existence." Now, when he says here that after this existence, this material existence, we become non-existence, means we become immaterial. We live a second life. We become absolutely different. Of course, we do not know what it is and how it is, because according to Rumi, it is howless. We do not know how it is. We only know in a negative way. We know something about it in negative. It is not like the life that we are living here. The other world is not, as I said, comprised of the opposites, of numbers. So that is a different world altogether. But the exact quality we do not have, the exact definition we do not have. And that appears to the mystics in their transcendental experiences that they have. So these are, I mean, you know, consecutive deaths that we so far have had, and we will have some more in future. Therefore, according to Rumi, we should not be frightened from death, because we have perfected ourselves. We have become more and more perfect through this consecutive death. Therefore, death is a mark and is a gate to perfection rather than to annihilation. So this is the how he sees. For a traveler who has got a destination, the more he becomes closer to the destination, he must be the happier he must be. For a prisoner, the more he gets closer to getting free, the happier he must become, and so on and so on. So that is the meaning of the death. Now look at the idea of the feast of sacrifice here. This is again another artful, actually, use of the feast of sacrifice. You know the feast in Islam. One is the feast of sacrifice, which is during the one of the actually parts of the pilgrim to Mecca. There actually the pilgrims must perform many things, including sacrificing a sheep or a cow or something. So that is the day that they should do this. It is a feast. It's called a feast of sacrifice. Okay, And another feast is the Feast of Fitr, which is the end of the Ramadan, 10 days from now. Okay, so there are two great feasts in Islam. The Feast of Sacrifice is very well known because, as I said, it belongs to the performance of the Hajj of Pilgrim. But Rumi, from his contemplative point of view, he actually sees in the Feast of Sacrifice absolutely a different thing. He thinks that it is only a symbol for the lovers in order to sacrifice himself for the beloved. In the pilgrim, when you are going to God, when you are visiting the house of God, there actually you are visiting your beloved in a symbolic way. So there you have to become more and more prepared in order to sacrifice yourself, to sacrifice your soul, so to speak, to make it sacred, to make it holy, the literal meaning of the sacrifice. What Rumi actually says here, he says